Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology, available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today.
Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions with Paul John Roach, minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here is your host, Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. Yes, I got a frog in my throat here. I'm your host, Paul John Roach, coming to you from Unity Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, as was said. Today I welcome author Sam Bennett to the show, as well as being the author of such books as Get It Done and Start Right Where You Are, which is the subject of today's discussion. She's also the creator of the Organized Artist Company, and she specializes in personal branding, career strategies, and small business marketing. So it's a pleasure to welcome Sam Bennett to today's show. Welcome, Sam.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me. Hi, everybody.
Hi. So thanks for tuning in, guys. So this book is really fun, insightful, user-friendly guide to shifting our lives into a more creative direction. And Sam offers up 65 themes to demonstrate how little changes can make a big difference. That's what the book says on the cover there, making a difference for overwhelmed procrastinators, frustrated overachievers, and recovering perfectionists. Oh, my goodness. That sort of covers the whole gamut, doesn't it, of who, parts of who we might be. Right. So if any of those things resonate with you folks, this may be a book for you. So, so Sam, you've been on the bottom of this awareness, before you came into a new understanding. In fact, the first sentence in the introduction says, "I was totally miserable." So, so tell us about that. How you got beyond being totally miserable?
I was totally miserable. I was totally broke, and I was crying on a couch in North Hollywood, California, wondering where my life had gone wrong. And it started. That started a series of a very small changes that ended up with me now having written a couple of books and, you know, six figures living by the beach. So, but I think the first change that happened is I realized that I had to stop locating my happiness in the future. I was living that life and doing that thing where I was like, well, if I get this job, if I get this gig, then it'll be okay. Or if I make this amount of money, or if I lose this weight, or if I do this thing or do that thing, then it'll be okay. And, you know, sometimes I would achieve those things and sometimes I wouldn't, but it wasn't affecting how I was changing on the inside. So I realized I had to start focusing on right now, right this second, right now. What could I be doing in this moment to be having a fuller, richer experience of my life?
Yeah, it's a huge point, isn't it? Because we tend to think that, you know, when my ship comes in, when I win the lottery, you know, when I get my act together, you know, when I know more, when I've gone to more workshops, you know, it'll all fall into place. And of course, as we also know, that sort of putting it out into future think, and it never comes. I mean, old time religion is like that too. You know, it may be miserable now, but you know, just wait till you die and all will be well. You know, you go to heaven. And in unity, we say, you know, the kingdom of heaven, as Jesus said, you know, the kingdom of heaven is within you, right now. There is only the now. You know, what is it that stops us enjoying the now? Is it because we can't see beyond the circumstances and events of our lives? You know, we get caught up in all the things that seem to be so potent and controlling. We can't see that there's actually peace and possibility in this moment, right?
I think that's a lot of it. I think we get pulled off our center by what other people want or what we think other people want or what we think they don't like about us. We get pulled off by circumstances. You know, things don't go our way, and all of a sudden, you know, things get a lot darker. You know, we lack the discipline to stay in our own center.
Yes. But we're about, as you say, one of the opening chapters, we're about creating miracles. Okay, now we may have heard this before. Okay, and you know, there's books like A Course in Miracles and you know, Expect a Miracle was the old bumper sticker. But what do you mean by when you say we're about creating miracles? What's that for you?
Yeah, so a miracle is, to me, is possible at any moment. For anyone, at any time, in any circumstance, and they happen all the time. They happen all the time. Any point at which your world cracks open a little bit, at any point at which you understand how much power and freedom you have in the present moment, at any point at which you can feel yourself being lifted up by that which is bigger than you are, however you want to define that, I think that's your moment for a miracle. And it can be as easy as a breath, you know?
So everything is quite wondrous, isn't it? It's interesting, this universe that we live in, because it could be the most horrific place, you know, imaginable, if you're looking at it from that point of view, or the most miraculous place, both at the same time. And sometimes, actually, what makes us the most miserable can also be that which wakes us up the most, too. We've talked about this a lot on the show, you know, that it's in those moments of crisis where the ego can't deal with it anymore, that something else must enter in, you know, some new appreciation, some new understanding. And that's a miraculous moment, I think.
Well, that's exactly right. I think we've all had that with, you know, there's been some narrow escape or something, you know, terrible happens, and all of a sudden we're really tasting this cup of coffee, and we're understanding that hands have gathered those beans and someone made it, and we feel the miracle in this cup of coffee, and we're, you know, moved to tears by a simple cup of coffee. But it also happens when wonderful things happen, you know, when we first fall in love with someone or there's a new baby, you know, you get that, like, every breath you're just, oh, it's so wonderful, it's so wonderful. So that's available to us all the time. That's not something that happens to us externally. That's something that happens internally.
Right, and you have a statement there that I like. It says, you are the center of you. And that sounds kind of, initially you'd say, well, yeah. But it's a rather deep statement, really, isn't it? Because so often we're not the center of ourselves. We're pulled in all different kinds of directions. We're subject to our moods and whims and fears, etc. And we forget that there is a you, a center of us that is, like we said, very still and pure and clear. And I love that reminder. You know, you are the center of you. Nobody can do it for you. Nobody else can find that center. You are called to do it for yourself. It's the ultimate self-responsibility, isn't it?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. I like to think of it like a wagon wheel, right? So if you stay right in the center of the wagon wheel, then life can spin around you and you stay centered. You stay calm. You stay truthful. You stay appreciative. You stay peaceful. And not that, you know, bad things don't happen or crappy things don't happen. Of course they do. They do to everyone. But what we don't want is for every circumstance, good or bad, to be pulling us off our center and like way out to the edge of the wagon wheel, because that's where you get tumbled.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
So yes, next time somebody says you're self-centered, say yes. Yes, self is in the center. Yes, I am self-centered. Thank you very much. Why? What's in your center?
Yeah, I think it was Saint Augustine that said, "God is a circle whose center is everywhere and whose circumference is nowhere." Mm-hmm. And I like that idea that everywhere we are is the center of the universe. So each single person on this planet, every sentient being, is at the center of the universe of their own particular perception of that universe. Right. So there's no time or space to spirit. We're all at the at the right and perfect place, at the center of things. And I think sometimes we think, these people with power, celebrity, authority, they're the ones that are really at the center. We're on the periphery, but that could be no further from the truth, really, because we are all in the center of God's universe. And I love that because it's a sense of purpose and worth, right? And you mentioned the net, it's a Buddhist and a Hindu idea too, the net of creation, the web, if you like, of interconnection, of holographic net of God's creativity. And every point in the net reflects the rest of the net, right?
That's right. That's right. Yes, we're part of this huge interwoven web of energy. If you imagine, you and your energy streaming out, maybe like a dandelion puff, that connecting you with sort of the potentiality of all things, and then everybody else's beams of energy, and even all the plants and animals and the minerals. It's all one thing, and you can start to see when you feel that net and that interconnectedness, first of all, how we are all connected, but also how you can lean back into it a little bit. You can trust the net to support you in the same way that you trust the air to be breathable. And you can tug on it a little bit. If you need a little energy or you need some support or you need something, you can tug on the net a little bit. And you start to notice how your greatness cannot overwhelm the net. You cannot be too big for God. You cannot be too big for the net. You are both much more powerful and much less significant than you may have been led to believe.
Yes, exactly. We like to say that we are, or at least I like to say, that we're nothing and everything, that being nothing means that I don't have to be a particularized form or ego being. I can be spacious. I can be everything. And that gets over this idea that I know I'm limited in any way. And in fact, I'm part and parcel of the whole, right? And so is everybody else. So it develops compassion as well, I think, because we understand we're all in this together. But I think some people balk at the idea of being nothing. They want to be something. It's a hard one, isn't it, to release and surrender and let go to this larger sense of who we are in truth.
Yeah, and I want to underline something you were saying earlier about how we look at, celebrities or people we perceive to be in power or people who just have something that we want.
Right.
And I think sometimes we tell ourselves a story that it must have been easier for them. Well, it must have been easier for them. Of course, Sam can write books. Oh, of course, Paul John can have a show. Oh, of course, it must have been easier for them. And I think you and I can both very confidently say, no, it wasn't easier.
Right.
It wasn't easier at all. And I work with Emmy Award winners and Academy Award winners, and it's not easy for anybody. So to understand that we're all equally significant and insignificant, and we all have our work to do.
That's right. Absolutely. Now you mentioned in the book that your husband is an atheist, right? And that was. I shouldn't say entertaining, but it was good to know. But tell us about that and how that works for you.
Yeah, it works fine because I don't care. I don't have an investment in what he believes or doesn't believe, and I know God doesn't care. So he's as long as you're respectful of what everybody else is doing, I think it's great. I don't think, I think when your beliefs start to limit your understanding of the world and your place in it, then, then I start to take issue with things. When your belief system starts to say, well, I only associate with these kinds of people, or I only do these kinds of things.
Right.
You know, when it starts to limit you, I think that's worth looking at. But as long as, you know, you stay in a spirit of open appreciation and inquiry, I feel fine. What anybody else believes isn't really any of my business.
Right, and I think so many people who call themselves atheists, you know, just can't handle the idea of a God as a being on a cloud, you know, ruling the universe and being kind of whimsical, that old man that's judging kind of thing. But when you talk to them about, well, maybe it's a presence or an energy or a that or whatever, you know, they say, well, you know, maybe I can sort of buy into that a little more. So I think sometimes it's just terminology, right, that... We just don't believe in this man, this super being kind of thing.
Right. No, and you got to admit, certainly organized religion has done very little to endear itself to the critical thinker. But I have to say, I don't perceive God as a moral force. I don't think God cares. Particularly in the same way that nature doesn't care, you know, a wave will tumble you, you know, whether you're having an affair with your neighbor's wife or not. You know, we care as people, we care as humans, we have an investment in a peaceful society, and we want to watch our behavior and the behavior of others so that we're sort of working towards a greater good. But I don't think God cares.
Right. Interesting, isn't it? And I would say that's true to a degree. You know, I would say that ultimately this presence, which we might call love, you know, deeply cares, but not in the sense that we think of it, you know, in a human sense, caring for good and bad behavior. It's something larger than that. I think there is a larger benevolence in the universe, you know, that is a caring presence. But
yeah, I think like
it,
that too.
Yeah, I think it includes storms and billion degree stars and things like that, which would burn us to a frazzle if we approached. You know, God is so much more magnificent that it's not going to fit into our little moralistic system, right? There's a larger thing going on here.
Exactly.
So I don't think he doesn't care. It's just that it's a larger kind of caring. Let's put it like
right.
that.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, good. I'm glad we worked that one out, because theologians have been struggling with that for the last 10,000 years, the idea of, you know, theodicy. Why is there suffering? You know, how could God do these things, allow these things? And I was listening
right, well,
to
it. And when you go back to this idea of the net and you know, all things being interconnected, including the stars and the galaxies, and, you know, we're co-creating our reality with this net. So it's not that God lets horrible things happen, it's that we do.
I was listening to a comedian, a spiritual comedian. She's a minister and a BBC presenter, and she's going to actually come to the church in April. She's a friend of mine. I visited her in England last year, but she's also a stand-up comedian, and she said, you know, some people don't like God because the world is shit, basically, not to put too fine a point on it. And she said, you know, the world is not shit. It's beautiful. We create the mess. And I thought that's a good distinction. You know, the world, the universe itself is a very beautiful place, but we kind of screw it up, you know. It's so don't blame it on God. Blame it on our incorrect understanding of how wonderful things are and all the messes we make out of things. We're going to go to the break soon, but I want to start the idea, because it goes all through the book, and that is be good to yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
To create well-being is to, you know, not to give in to yourself and indulge yourself. There needs to be some discipline, but ultimately to be good to yourself, to nurture yourself, to be part of this creative net rather than, you know, fight against it all the time and fall into habits that limit. So obviously this is very important to you, right?
Very, very, yes. Yes, you got to be a good parent to yourself, you know, firm when you need to be firm, but loving and compassionate when you need to be loving and compassionate.
Another thing you mentioned I think it's on page 39, and I love this phrase. It says, structure is freedom. A lot of people think, you know, non-structure is freedom. You know, I don't have to be controlled. I'm free. But I love the idea that, certain structures, certain creative structures can create a container that gives us larger amounts of freedom.
Absolutely, and I think all artists understand this. You know, writers and dancers and musicians, like we understand that there needs to be a container. There has to be rules of the game, and then within those rules of the game, you have an unbelievable freedom.
Yes,
and that's what makes things beautiful.
Well, they say there's as many numbers between zero and one as there is between one and infinity, right? And your common mind says that, how is that possible? You know, there's bound to be more between one and infinity. But the thing is, there's an infinite amount of gradations here that can be conceived. And so even though you're in the structure of zero to one, you have an infinite possibility going on in that structure. And that's what we're saying here is, sometimes we feel like endless freedom is the way it needs to be. But I think discipline, the discipline, say, of the Zen, Buddhist who meditates looking at the wall for 8 hours a day, you could say it's a very rigid and defined way of life. And yet within that, you know, that Buddhist can find the infinity of spacious freedom and as well as pain and difficulty and frustration. You know, you face everything. But it certainly doesn't limit you. It frees you ultimately.
That's right. That's right. And even, you know, just on a more practical level, like I schedule my playing hooky time. You know, I finally figured out that I don't like to work Friday afternoons. So I book that time out on my calendar. Uh-huh. And now rather than just sort of, you know, like waiting and, you know, like wishing I had free time, I know when it is. And then those Friday afternoons, I can do whatever I want. And I have so much fun. But only because I schedule the time. You know how it is. If you wait till you suddenly have spare time, you'll never find it.
You know, it's funny how we rail against being in the cage, but the door is open. You know, but
we
still want to complain about it. Oh, I can't get. I wish I wasn't in this cage. Well, hey, you know, go through the door. You've created that door there, you know, by having that Friday afternoon off. So yeah, that's wonderful, folks. With Sam Bennett, we're looking at her book, Start Right Where You Are. Little changes can make a big difference for procrastinators, overachievers, and perfectionists. And when we come back, we'll talk some more about well-being and being good to ourselves and how to take creative charge of our lives. Join us after these messages from Unity.
As Unity Online Radio continues to expand its programming and outreach to the world, we count on the support of listeners like you. Please make your donation today. Go to www.unity.fm and click on Donate Now.
That the Buddha gave us the formula to create a beautiful, abundant life. Did you know that Jesus gave us the formula to create a beautiful, abundant life? Did you know that both these masters taught exactly the same thing? And guess what? They did not teach the law of attraction. They taught the great paradox of prosperity. You can have anything you want. Why, you can have things you don't even know you want, but not by wanting them. Instead, put your attention on the vibrant presence of the divine within. Do that, and your life will change. It has to. That is the natural order. Want to crack the code on the great paradox? Get Janet Connor's The Lotus and the Lily, available everywhere great books are sold.
The world is full of voices, advertising, television, politics, colleagues, family, and friends. All are too happy to tell us how to live. In all of that noise, it's easy to miss the one voice that matters. your own soul. What would happen if you could hear that voice? Imagine the clarity, confidence, and courage that would be yours and the life you could create. Join Janet Connor, best-selling author of Writing Down Your Soul, The Lotus and the Lily, and Your Soul Wants Five Things, as she and her guests explore how to hear the call of the soul and create the soul-directed life. Live Thursday at 1 p.m. Central, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Go inside to find my God.
You've been listening to World Spirituality with host Reverend Paul John Roach. To learn more about Reverend Paul John Roach, visit his website, pauljohnroach.com. Or if you have questions, email him at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. We now return to World Spirituality.
All right, welcome back to today's show. Yeah, and check out my website, pauljohnroach.com, and see my my radio interview with Jeff Lord on Funky Town Podcast. I was talking about the new book I'm writing about the spiritual path in 12 rock songs. And it's going to be an interesting project. I'm right in the middle of it right now. But I talk about it on that show. You can just go on the website and check that out. But I'm with Sam Bennett today, and we're talking about her new book, Start Right Where You Are. And we talked in the before the break about the importance of being good to yourself. In so many ways, we are harsh on ourselves. We sabotage ourselves. We may be a perfectionist or an overachiever. We want to push at the envelope all the time. We feel overwhelmed. You talk about that too, don't you? We're overwhelmed, but we're also underwhelmed. What does that mean?
Yeah, sometimes, you know, the feeling of overwhelm, the thing I want to point out about overwhelm is two things. One, overwhelm is a choice. It's something you decide for yourself that you're overwhelmed. It's not something that somebody else does to you. It's a choice you're making. And I think it tends to happen, or it's a choice we tend to make, when everything's kind of coming at us with the same level of intensity, you know, when we kind of can't tell what's important. And sometimes we say we feel overwhelmed when we're actually underwhelmed. We're actually kind of bored. You know, when you got a long list of things to do and none of them are particularly interesting, like, you just go, oh, I'm so overwhelmed. You get that, oh, I'm exhausted, I haven't even started yet. Well, it may be that you're not giving yourself enough interesting or fun things to do. And this issue of self-care, you know, I think the women's magazines have co-opted this a little bit, so we start to think like, oh, it's a mud wrap in Napa or something, which I'm all for, you know, nothing against a mud wrap in Napa, but... But I want something that's more possible, you know, in our minute-to-minute life, in our day-to-day life. And I think we all have that feeling of like, oh, I couldn't take time for myself. That's selfish. It would be selfish if I took time for myself. I don't have time to do my prayer and meditation work, or I don't have time to go work out, or I don't have time to work on my creative projects. Other people need me. And here's what I want to say about that, is it's completely backwards. Because what's selfish is... when you show up exhausted, stressed out, underfed, underslept, and with no sense of humor, you know, that's selfish because the rest of us have to deal with you when you're like that. And that's not your best self, right? On the other hand, when you take that time for your prayer and meditation, you take that time to, you know, eat your food and get some rest and be creatively fulfilled, when you show up like that, we love that version of you. That is the ultimate act of generosity, because you're there and there's a light in your eyes and you can listen and you're less reactive. You don't take things so personally. You have good ideas. Like, that's the, can you imagine if everybody showed up like that?
Might be a different world, huh?
It could be a whole different world. And all we're talking about is fed, rested, you know, meditated, walked, cuddled, maybe.
Well,
you know, I think, you treat yourself as well as you treat your dog, and you should be okay.
Right. I think what you're saying is there's so many extraneous details that we think are so important that aren't, right? That we fill our lives up with all these things. They don't really fulfill us. We don't feel like we're achieving our potential, but we feel we have to do all these things. And it's kind of looking at life as a chore. You know, I like to look at life as an adventure. And even if I've got something I don't want to do, you know, I'll label it an adventure because then it shifts the way I approach it, you know, just to name it that, makes it that, it seems, you know, and so it's an attitude of mind, isn't it? And as we like to say, you know, and I'm sure you do as well, we all have the same amount of time. Yeah. There's not like some people have more time given to them than others. And yet it seems that way, doesn't it? It seems some people have never got enough time to achieve what they think they need to achieve. And others seem to be, working less hours and achieving more. You know, well, how does that work? I mean, it must be an attitude of mind, right? An approach to this thing called time, because ultimately I think there is no such thing as time. We it's a mental construct, right? We make it what we will.
Yeah, it makes me a little crazy too. Sometimes people will say like, oh, you know, you're so lucky you have time to write a book. I wish I had time to write a book. And I'm like, mm-hmm. You do. We all get the same 24 hours. I didn't get extra. You know, right. You do have time. You're just spending it on other things, which is fine. But I think part of what you're talking about is taking responsibility for your own schedule. You know, if you're signed up to do a bunch of things that you don't want to do, well, either renegotiate those agreements or find a way to want to do them.
Right.
And, you know, you get to be 100% responsible for the results of your life. And if you want to know what's important to you, you know, look at your calendar, look at your checkbook, because you spend time and you spend money on that which is important to you. And oftentimes, I think we let our time dribble away from us, you know, sometime on Facebook, sometime on YouTube, some video games, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, the evening's gone or the day is gone. So being a little more intentional about how you're spending your time, I think, will allow you to get more of the important stuff done. So my big piece of advice, and we can all take the pledge right now, is to spend 15 minutes a day, every single day, on the projects that matter most to you, on the projects that are closest to your heart. They may not matter to anyone else, but they matter to you. 15 minutes a day, every single day, before you check your email, before you check your email, before you check your email, spend 15 minutes a day on your own creativity, your own, the things that bring you joy and light you up.
And you've got a number of chapters in the book on time. I mean, there's ways, I think on page 33, you talk about six ways to take control of your time. And then another chapter is entitled Time Boulders that seem to be these big events that seem to overwhelm us, but you're saying they don't. There's different ways to look at them. So there's a lot of good advice, isn't there, how to deal with this thing called time, which we fear, I think, that we just don't have enough time, it's all running out, etc.
Yeah, that was really how I designed the book. I mean, as you can see, it's a lot of really super teeny tiny chapters. So some of them are just a page or two, and they all have a little action step, you know, something that you can do right now that will, you know, might help, or at least is worth trying. And a lot of it does have to do with managing your time so that you don't feel like your life is running you. But again, like you're in control and you're in the center.
Well, one phrase you have, and it's a title of one of the themes, is the urgency trap. And I think that's huge for many of us. What do you mean by that, the urgency trap?
Well, it's something we're seeing more and more of as the way technology and social media is unfolding. There's all kinds of studies that show that every time something pings, basically, we get a little hit of dopamine. We feel pleasure. We feel like, oh, someone needs me. You know, oh, something's happening. You know, and we're animals. You know, we're designed to be alert to something that changes, you know, something that says, hey, look at me. You go, oh, what's that? So and the designers, you know this. So your email pings, your message app pings, your WhatsApp pings, your Facebook pings, everything pings, and you start to feel like everything is urgent and everything needs your attention right now. But the fact of the matter is, very few of those things actually need your attention right now.
Yes.
There is nothing happening on your email that cannot wait until 9:30 in the morning to be responded to. And when you take the first hour of your day, your work day, and spend it on the stuff that's really going to make a difference in your life, and that's writing your book, that's focusing on your relationships, reaching out to people who are important to you, maintaining relationships with, you know, clients and colleagues and former colleagues, your own education, your own well-being, your own physical well-being. When you pay attention to that stuff first, a lot of the urgency stuff goes down, becomes less urgent. And also, you know, you can train people. I often do not respond to emails or even texts for 24 hours. And not because I don't have the time, but because I don't want to train people that I am infinitely available.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you want to be, you know, you want to be reliable, but not infinitely available.
Another thing you mentioned is delegate. A lot of us have a hard time doing that, allowing somebody else to do something. And you mentioned in the book that about somebody that started a company, you know, with their own two hands and everything, and they ended up with a company the size that they could hold in their two hands, you know, because they refused to delegate to anybody else to allow other people to come in and help in some way. And another thing you mentioned too is when you ask for help is go to the best, you know, sign on geniuses, right? You go to experts. I think there's a lot of wealth of talent available to us that we don't use for one reason or another, but they can be helpful for us. So talk about that.
Yeah, I see people all the time keeping their foot on the neck of their business, keeping their foot on the neck of their own life's productivity because they refuse to let anybody else in there. And I get it. I'm a nice Midwestern girl, too. I have that voice in my head that says, well, I should just be able to do it myself, you know. And it's weird because there's this sort of false humility of like, no, I don't want to bother anybody else. But then also this sort of false grandiosity of like, plus no one's going to do it as well as I could do it.
Yeah.
No
mm-hmm.
one's going to be as good as me at doing it. Mm-hmm. Like, the fact of the matter is, you're only really great at a couple of things.
Yeah, that's right.
We're all only really great at a couple of things. You know, we all have our zones of genius, and then we all have the stuff we can do, and then we have the stuff that we really, you know, can't do or don't want to do. And anything that's outside of your particular zone of genius should be handled by somebody else. And the criteria for that looks like this. If somebody else can do it, then somebody else must do it. The work that only you can do, you must do. So no one else can write your book. No one else can sing your song. No one else can say your prayers. No one else can take a walk for you. Only you can do those things. But everything else, you know, and yeah, don't cheap out on talent. Hire the best people you can find. Make it great for them. Overpay them. Make a great culture for them. You know, be grateful to them. And watch your life explode. It's amazing what can happen when you bring people together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. You know, another phrase I like is nothing bad is happening. You know, and that doesn't mean that, you know, when life's going crazy and we've got a terrible diagnosis that we say to ourselves nothing bad is happening. Of course, we look at the sadnesses in our lives, but this technique is when we're hassled with things, right? Overwhelmed, maybe annoyed because the traffic isn't moving. But to tell ourselves at that time, you know, nothing bad is happening here. I don't have to up the ante on my frustration and my anger and my rage, you know, for really nothing. I love traffic stop because then it gives me time to contemplate and meditate, you know. And when I look at it like that, it's like I could stay in that traffic forever. Well, maybe not forever. There's a limit. But it doesn't bother me in any way that it did when I think I got to get somewhere. You know, I must get home. Why is the traffic in my way? You know, you can reframe it, right? And I love that phrase. Nothing bad is happening right now. You know, I'm still here. Everything's good.
I say it all the time, and my team says it all the time, and now my clients and students are saying it back to me all the time. And it really does actually, I mean, it's super effective for those everyday annoyances, but it actually works for the bigger, more heartbreaking events of our lives as well. Because here's what happens for me. When the phrase, nothing bad is happening, sets my mind on a path for a couple of things. First of all, it reminds me that, as we were saying earlier, you know, I have a belief that says we live in a benevolent universe. And that's true not just when things are going my way. So it reminds me of my spiritual grounding.
Right.
The second thing it does is it makes me be a little more precise with my language, right? If nothing bad is happening, then what is happening? Is something heartbreaking happening? Is something challenging happening, something uncomfortable, or something that's just not the way I would have planned it to go this way happening? What is happening? And finally, it causes me to look for the opportunity. Where is the invitation in this thing that looks like a problem or a mistake or a crisis? Where am I being called forward? Am I being called forward to be a more tender-hearted person, to be a more forgiving person, to be a better communicator or a better leader or a better boss or a better partner, you know, a better citizen? How is this circumstance inviting me forward to grow?
Right. So really what we're saying is it's just happening, right? I don't have to label it good or bad. It's what it is.
That's right.
My value comes from something else, not from the circumstances of my life. And this has been proved even in the most unlikely of situations, you know, because often people will say, well, yeah, that's nice. Nothing bad's happening. But you're not in a torture chamber or in a death camp, you know, like in Nazi Germany or whatever. But even the people who were in those camps, you know, the testimony is that those who had some kind of meaning to cling on to were the ones that survived often, rather than those that sort of gave up and it was all horror and misery. And I think Viktor Frankl wrote a wonderful book about it. Didn't
I was going to say, if Viktor Frankl can live through it, he literally was in the death camps.
Right.
I'm not trying to take away anyone's sorrow or sympathy or any empathy, you know, for the hardships of our lives. We all get the same amount of pain. Everybody's life is as hard for them as your life is for you and my life is for me. You know, some people have more dramatic stories. Some people have, you know, what seems like more pain, but I guarantee you it's not. And we also know that in every pain, there is an opportunity and a blessing, and we look for those people, right? And we hear those stories all the time, you know, that getting diagnosed with cancer was the best thing that ever happened to me.
Yes.
You know, losing my child broke me open, and it was the best thing that ever happened to me. It forced me to become a person that I never would have become otherwise. You know, we don't wish for these things, of course, but we know they happen. You're right. It's not that nothing bad is happening. It's just that something is happening. So what is it?
Right. And that's a highly spiritual place to be, isn't it? Is to
This is spiritual grad school for sure.
Right. Yeah.
It takes a lot of discipline and a lot of spiritual maturity. But you know, but again, even just for the day-to-day things, I remember one time I was on a flight that got canceled, so we're all in line to get rebooked and everybody's stomping their feet and rolling their eyes and looking exhausted. And this woman is on a cell phone near me and she goes, "Well, the flight's been canceled. This is a nightmare."
Yeah,
I was like, "Oh, I don't know, it's a nightmare. I mean, we're inside, we're warm, you know.
Yeah,
like,
really.
We're still going to get across the country in less than a day. I mean, that's kind of amazing."
Yeah.
I think it's, you know. And sure enough, you know, I was so glad that she was that upset because it reminded me that I actually didn't have to be that upset. And
yeah,
then I was able to come
amazing,
up to the counter. And, like,
and it
careful.
Reminds you not to put that lady on an Antarctic expedition with you.
Well, exactly.
Next time I go to the South Pole, I won't be taking her.
We will not invite her along.
Okay, so things are going swimmingly. We've mastered all these things, you know, that we're seeing everything as creative. But then you say there is the inevitable backlash. Now, what's that about then? There's two kinds of backlash, right? The interior and the exterior. Tell us about
that. Yeah, you know how that is? You finally decide you're going to make a change, you're going to do things differently, you're going to, you know, something, and you're really proud of yourself, and then, boom, there's some inevitable backlash. And I call it the inevitable backlash because it's inevitable. It happens for everyone, and these are the dragons at the gate. Right? And whether it's the voice inside of your own head or a voice of someone in your life who says, well, you can't do that. That's not going to work. What do you know about that? Who's going to pay you for that? You're not qualified to do that. Right? So, and sometimes it's like the universe has a yard sale on all our old stuff. You know, the boss calls you, offers your old job back at a little bit more money. You know, the old boyfriend calls, says, hey, you know, what you up to? You want to hang out? And this is your opportunity to say, to test your own mettle and to say, nope, I made a change. I'm doing it differently. Thanks for the offer, but I'm sticking with a new plan.
Right.
Understand that dip, what feels like a backlash, what feels like a message of no, change back, it's just the dragons at the gate. You just got to keep walking.
I was listening to Gillian Clark. She's the national poet of Wales. I grew up in Wales, so I was interested in listening to her being interviewed. I like her poetry, and she was saying when she got to college, and she began writing in her teen years. And when she got to university, her professor said, now this is an academic institution. You know, you don't want to be writing any poetry. That's really not what we're about here. So give that up. And she took him seriously, you know, for a few years because she admired him as her professor. And looking back on it, though, she thought, my goodness, you know, he didn't need to say that to me, really. That didn't help. Luckily, the writing genius within her, you know, helped her continue, and she became a quite well-known, obviously, she's National Poet of Wales. But, you know, it's sometimes we could say words to someone that could really derail us for a while, right? And we have to be careful that we don't say things to others like that, to our children or to somebody that's maybe aspirational, and we shoot them down.
That's right. And to ourselves. I mean, we're way more vicious to ourselves than we are to anybody else. If I ever heard an adult talking to a child the way I talk to myself in my head sometimes, you know, I'd have to call child services.
There we go. Whoops. All right. Let's see. Page 163. You've got 7 kinds of clutter nobody ever talks about. Tell us. Well, let's talk about it now. What are some of these 7 kinds of clutter?
Yeah. So, clutter is the residue of old decisions, right? Clutter is stuck energy. So it's not about having a lot of stuff. I mean, I have a lot of my desk. I'm looking at my desk right now. I got 9 things of markers and pens. Like, there's a lot going on here.
Yeah.
But it's in motion. You know, I touch this stuff pretty much every day. So if you use it or you love it, keep it. Right? I don't care how much stuff you have. It's the stuff that you don't love and you're not using that I'm worried about. And what we want to do is look underneath a little bit and see what's the message of this thing. Because sometimes we're hanging on to something because it represents a dream we have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, well, I don't have a cabin in the mountains yet, but I bought the papier-mâché moose head, you know, for when I do get it. Like, well, you know, that's taken up a lot of space. And
they're big animals.
And you might be better served to start a penny jar for the cabin or schedule a weekend away in the mountains, you know, to really start to move forward on your dream rather than just collecting a lot of stuff that represents that dream. Sometimes it's about a dream that we think we've let go. You know, I had a friend who had a lot of old film equipment because she used to make films with 7th and 8th grade girls. And she loved working with those girls, and she loved making those films. And she realized she had this sort of belief that if she got rid of that old equipment, it was somehow giving up on those girls or somehow giving up on her dream of being a filmmaker. And I said, Sarah, sweetheart, you can hold up your iPhone and hit the button right now and we can make a movie. Like, right this second, we can, hello, you're on, you know, we can start right now. You don't need, you know, the equipment is not your dream.
Your dreams are your dreams. I think nostalgia is a big one, and you have that as one of them. You know, many of us get caught in that nostalgic view. I can't let that one go, you know, whether it be a thing, an item, or whether it be an idea or a feeling about the past. And we feel we have to honor that, right? If I let go, I'm being cruel, I'm being dismissive to those things in my past. And that's a really tricky one to let go of, I think.
It is. It is. And remember, yes, you can love the person who gave it to you. You can love the memory it represents. You can love the size you were when you bought it. But that's different than loving the thing itself.
Yeah.
So if you don't love the thing itself, you know, take a picture of it or take just, you know, the ribbon from it or something so that it still stays in your memories. Your memories are your own. They're your own precious. They're not going anywhere. Let the thing go. And, you know, for me, I my grandmother was an incredibly elegant and tasteful woman, and I ended up with a full set of her china. And it stayed in boxes for years and years. And then finally I was moving, and I thought, this is ridiculous. You know, what, am I going to start suddenly having six sit-down dinners for 30? Like, what am I supposed to do with this stuff? And finally I imagined her next to me. I imagined her with me saying, Samantha, please, this isn't appropriate to your life. It's just China. Let it go. You know, my grandmother was also a very practical person. But it helped me. It helped me to imagine her there and imagine her giving me her blessing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, don't tell my wife. She loves to collect. No, that's not true. I'm not going to affirm that. But she has a lot of china. But yeah, agreed. You know, when it becomes something that's just not helpful in our lives, you know, that and there's nothing more wonderful, is there, than releasing something, I think. I read a book recently, you're probably familiar with it, where you ask the question, does this bring me joy, you know? And if it brings you joy, keep it. If you realize this doesn't bring me joy anymore, you know, it's time to release it. And I think probably that's a good way of approaching it, isn't it? If it's just an albatross around my neck now, you know, however much value I think there is in it, it's just not bringing me joy, then it's time to let it go.
That's right. That's Marie Kondo's book called The Life Changing
Magic. That's right.
Yeah. Terrific.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great book. I love the idea that, you know, this isn't a linear thing either. You know, it's not like we're here and we're trying to get to somewhere else. You know, one of your chapters says life does not move in one direction. And I think that's important to tell ourselves that, right? That it's a cycle, it's a spiral rather than the linear progression. And sometimes we feel, oh, I'm back to the where I began. But you're always a little bit higher up on the spiral. And there's always a different way of approaching the same apparent situation. Situation, right? So we should give ourselves credit for the fact that we're on the journey, that, and it's not necessarily linear.
Well, that's exactly right. And that belief that somehow you're behind, or you should be further along, or somebody's ahead of you, or you've missed your chance, or any of those kind of beliefs, that's an express elevator to hell. Like, that is a really fast way to feel really, really bad. So, yeah, don't fall into that trap. Understand that once-in-a-lifetime opportunities happen every single day. And there is no race. There is no score being kept. You are living your life perfectly. Your life is unfolding perfectly. You've made exactly the right decisions. You've done the best you can do with the information you have. You know, trust that that time is swooping around you, you know, and the lessons you've learned and the choices you've made, it's all part of this net. It's all here supporting you. And you can't fail at life. You can't do your life wrong.
There we go. And I think since this is the week of the inauguration of our new president, we're going out live this week. My last question is going to be that, in light of start right where we are and how to deal with life in a creative way, how do we deal with some of the fears associated with that many people are feeling around to the new president, the fact that he said things that seem to many ears not non-presidential, divisive, dismissive of certain groups and people. What's your, in a nutshell, What would you say to those who are, you know, feeling a little bit of trepidation this week?
Yeah. So again, don't let anything pull you off your center. You know, keep your spiritual maturity. Keep hanging on to the, you know, that God's got this. You know, nothing bad is happening. And I would make a personal request to knock off the name calling. Name calling doesn't help, no matter what your belief system is, right?
Right.
So we treat people with respect, whether they've earned it or not. We treat people with respect, whether they deserve it or not. We don't do it for them. We do it for ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Good.
So continue to treat people with respect and then get really curious. What's being asked of you? You know, how are you being asked to grow? How are you being asked to maybe be more active or be more compassionate or have deeper conversations with people you disagree with? You know, where can we, you know, we all want the same thing. Everybody wants the same thing. Everybody wants to have their work matter. Everybody wants to love and be loved. Everybody wants to eat good food and tell good jokes and have their kids do better than they did. Like, that's what all people want. That's who we are. So, and then we make such a big deal about these last little differences, you know. Oh, I'm a no foam latte. Like, you know, like, oh, she's French. Oh, he's a Democrat. You know, like, that matters. Like, look for the common humanity and look for the opportunities to be kind.
Yeah, sage advice. All right, we're at the end of the show. Let me tell you about next week, and then we'll say goodbye to Sam. Next week, a senior meditation teacher at Spirit Rock Meditation Center and the founder of the Mindfulness Institute, Mark Coleman, joins me. And he's going to talk about his book, which is Make Peace with Your Mind, How Mindfulness and Compassion Can Free you from your inner critic. So a little bit of piggybacking on what we talked about today, actually. So should be interesting to see what Mark Coleman brings about mindfulness, powerful technique of freeing ourselves from and healthy conditioning and helping us to be more compassionate, which I think is crucially important right now. So right now I want to thank Sam Bennett for being with me on the show. It was a wonderful show. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Reverend Paul John.
All right, and thanks for listening, guys. Tune in next week, all right, and have a great week. Bye-bye now.
Thank you for tuning in to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Central to further examine the spiritual teachings and religious traditions of our world, and to discover the universal truth principles present in all. World Spirituality, only on UnityOnlineRadio.org, the voice of an awakening world. This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org.
Tucked away in the Unity Library archives in Unity Village, Missouri, you can find a secret treasure. They are the scripts from Unity co-founder Charles Fillmore's early days on broadcast radio, the teachings of Unity's founders, almost 100 years old. Now, for the first time in history, you can hear them through the power of the Internet. Join Bob Brock every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, for Unity Classic Radio. Words from Our Past. Discover the wisdom of Charles Fillmore's talks and of other Unity Radio speakers read on the air again. Call in your comments and questions as Bob and his special guests revisit Unity Radio talks of the past, along with historical background from the early days of the Unity movement. That's Unity Classic Radio. Words from Our Past. Every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. Right here on Unity FM. The voice of an awakening world.
With all the paths open to us, it's easy to feel lost sometimes. Although the darkness of doubt and confusion may make the best choices difficult to see, there is within each of us a light that helps to illumine our way. When I stop and let inner peace be my guide, I am surely led to good, no matter what the circumstance. The peace I feel within myself paves any path I'm on, making even the roughest roads more manageable. I've heard that it's not so much the destination that matters as the journey itself. So in the midst of deciding which way to go in life, I go within. Wherever I turn, the signs all point to peace. Peace can begin with me.
To find a Unity Church near you, please visit our website at www.unity.org.
Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology, available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today